Welcome, everyone, to another edition of This NANUP Life. I'm Peter Spriffelis, and this is my observations of what we are doing on and to the planet we all call home from my base here in NANUP, down in the southwest corner of Western Australia. If you haven't done so already, please head over to the website thisnanuplife.net and subscribe to receive updates about new podcast episodes and the accompanying blog posts, and leave comments. It would be great to hear from you. Today, I'm continuing my Truthonomics series. This one's entitled Heads in the Clouds. And what I'll mainly be talking about today is the environmental and climate impacts and resource uses associated with our reliance on cloud computing. So let's begin. Our smartphones would be pretty dumb without cloud connectivity. And what we need to ask ourselves is just how clean and green is this cloud that powers our digital lives? Whether you like it or not, much about your life that you might want to keep private is in the cloud. The cloud being mere doublespeak for someone else's computer. That's someone else siphoning your life from your phone and reselling it across the cloud is typically one of the Fabulous Five. That is Amazon, Apple, Microsoft, Google, or Meta, the US-centric digital behemoth for most of us residing in Western countries. This year, roughly 150 zettabytes of data will be sucked up and sold across the cloud. That's 150 British trillion, that is billion gigabytes of data, or what an American would call 150 quadrillion gigabytes of data. Put another way, that's about 2.4 billion smartphones worth of data every year. A lot. So it's a good thing we're not paying for it at all. But of course we are paying for it all, in every possible way. There's no free lunch. Aside from the cloud-delivered ads we have to scythe our way through that are built into the price of every item and service we buy online, we pay far more than just dollars for cloud computing. The exhilaratingly clever, often useful, albeit addictive engagement we have with the cloud has both direct and climate-induced environmental impacts. To begin with, is there another complex device humanity routinely manufactures in such large quantities as computer chips, the beating heart of our cloud-connected phones, our car sat navs, or crammed by the thousands into massive cloud data processing and servicing computers? A wide variety of materials sourced from across the globe, ranging from the quite common, basically very pure sand, to the quite rare, such as aptly named rare earth metals, are needed to manufacture each and every computer chip. The US is so concerned about mineral inputs for computer chip manufacture that it enacted the CHIPS and Science Act in 2022. This act is intended to shore up the US's tenuous chip mineral supply chains. Arsenic, cobalt and gallium, and several rare earth metals top the US's hard-to-come-by list. The world supply of rare earths is controlled by China, the US's greatest geopolitical competitor. Other minerals are the product of war-torn countries eked out with forced child labour, such as cobalt from the Democratic Republic of Congo by artisanal, that is, do-it-yourself, miners. Such supply acts effective corporate or government management of local environmental degradation and pollution. Then there is the pure energy needed to create the wonder that is a computer chip. Taiwan's largest manufacturer, Taiwan Semiconductor Manufacturing Company, producer of about 90% of the world's high-end chips, consumes over 5% of Taiwanese total grid power output. But that's not the only power drain. Cloud computers are housed together in power-hungry data centers. The size of cloud computing data centers aren't described in geeky terms like terabytes of storage or megaflops of processing speed. Their capacity is so tightly correlated with their draw of grid power that their size is described in terms of their maximum power consumption. The next DC hyperscale data center recently opened in Perth, here in Western Australia, is described as a 20 megawatt IT capacity data center. That is, this single Perth data centre can draw up to 20 megawatts from the grid when operating at peak capacity. This is about 5% of the power output of a typical large coal or natural gas 400 megawatt power station operating in Western Australia. About the same draw on power as 30,000 households, so quite a lot. About 9,000 data centres are scattered across the globe. These range from China Telecom's 150 megawatt Inner Mongolia Information Park, serving about 50% of the Chinese cloud computing market, to more modest offerings like NextDC's 20 megawatt centre here in Western Australia. Cloud computing likely accounts for at least 2% of today's world electricity consumption and is growing exponentially. Business as usual, which assumes no cold or hot wars disrupting energy or technology supply chains, will likely see the cloud consume as much as 8% of electricity production by the end of the decade. Even if we're lucky enough to flatten the greenhouse emissions curve by then, over a billion tons of CO2 per year will be pumped into the atmosphere to feed our digital addictions. Now, our cloud addiction is understandable. I want automated digital guardrails assisting my clinical colleagues deliver safer patient care. I love having my e-books read to me, and I routinely use voice recognition to dictate my clinical notes. And what business would want to roll back corporate email, online meetings, or cloud-based supply chain management? The explosion in artificial intelligence will be an important contributor to rising power consumption. Generative AI use is growing rapidly. You know, although your kid's teacher doesn't want your child using ChatGPT for their homework, make no mistake, teachers love using ChatGPT to grade assignments. They are also using generative AI to develop syllabus and transform a few dot points about your Hope of the Nation's reading and writing performance issues into a school report. These reports come complete with some excellent pointers about things Skylar or Chase should work on at home. Most of the report is generated by the AI technology itself. Within a decade, likely all of it will be, teachers will just be feeding in the whole semester's raw assignments. But exponential growth can't last forever. It is a simple exercise to project that sometime over the next decade or so, the growth in cloud computing will collide with our old friend reality, that is, the physical limits of our planet's natural resource abundance and power generation systems. Unabated growth of cloud data processing, climbing to the mid-yottabytes, that's 1,000 zettabytes annually, would see cloud computing consuming all grid power generation on Earth. There won't be many humans to buy smartphones if we don't set aside some energy for global food production. There are also homes to build, air conditioning to power, healthcare and education to deliver. We will also likely want to allocate significant resources and energy to personal and public transport, to the businesses that service our lives, as well as, unfortunately, warfare material production, given growing geopolitical tensions. The cloud is already competing with these energy demands. Take Ireland, for an example, where data centres are now the largest and still growing consumer of Ireland's power supply, consuming about a quarter of Ireland's power supply. Now, one thing about a digital cloud is that it doesn't make it rain. Quite the opposite, in fact. All those megawatts of power consumption create megawatts of waste heat. Data centres located anywhere but the South Pole, noting we have had small ones there since 2010, need sophisticated water-based cooling systems. In addition to the energy competition, our increasing adoption of AI is competing with other life-sustaining demands for scarce and depleting global fresh water supplies. About 5 billion cubic metres of fresh water, that's 2 million Olympic swimming pools worth, will be diverted from other uses, like growing crops or providing fresh water for people to drink, just to keep data centres cool as we deepen our engagement with AI within just a few years. Stepping back, we need to make some hard choices about the extent to which we want to add AI to online searches just because we can, particularly given the fact that adding AI consumes 3 times as much energy as current search techniques do. Curbing greenhouse emissions and preserving energy, fresh water, and other natural resources for more meaningful uses than scrolling cat videos depends upon these choices. However, if all of this sounds environmentally unhelpful, you'll be pleased to know that I've saved the air quotes best until last. That's the environmental lunacy of cryptocurrency mining. It's still early, is the mantra of crypto bros who cling to the idea that cryptocurrencies will, one day this century, find real-world uses outside of pseudonymous porn, drug, and money laundering payments. However, even these uses are minuscule compared to the main activity in the cryptosphere, that is, feeding humankind's insatiable appetite for gambling. Across the planet, day and night, the crypto casinos, euphemistically called exchanges, allow hunters to trade pairs of crypto coins, typically buying and selling Bitcoin or any of the thousands of Me Too coins, with stablecoin money. Stablecoins are like casino chips denominated in something you might recognize, such as US dollars, and are called stable because each stablecoin dollar is supposed to be backed one-to-one by a real dollar or equivalent asset in a real bank. All of this digital gambling chicanery adds to cloud computing energy consumption. However, it is dwarfed by the process that gives birth to each and every Bitcoin. The creation of a Bitcoin has been likened to running your car engine to solve Sudoku problems you can trade for heroin. So, to try and explain this fairly simply, Bitcoin miners use arrays of powerful computer chips in a race with other miners to identify a random number that holds the key to unlocking and making available new Bitcoins to the world. This race is called Bitcoin mining. The race is repeated every few minutes, which creates a new Bitcoin every few minutes. Depending on the Bitcoin price and the cost of energy to power the array of chips, winning the race on a fairly regular basis can be quite lucrative for Bitcoin miners. Bitcoin miners like to set up their arrays of computer chips near cheap energy sources, irrespective of their greenhouse emissions, in order to maximize their chance of profits. Best estimates are that the incessant 24-hour cycle of races to create new Bitcoins consumes about 150 terawatts, which is about the same power consumption as Argentina. That is, every second of every day, we are wasting a country's worth of energy on a technology useful only for gambling and illegal payments. Abject insanity, in my view. So how do we constrain the climate and environmental impacts of the cloud? Apart from banning crypto mining, constraining the ecocidal footprint of our digital lives will not be easy. I hypocritically run this blog on the cloud. I can find no cheaper, reliable alternative. I suppose I could stream a bit less video. Unlike crypto, we are still early when it comes to understanding how to harness the power of AI. In a recent Blue Sky post, I likened our understanding of AI to our understanding of the first lasers in the 1960s. It took a couple of decades before lasers became genuinely useful, other than as a prop nearly slicing Sean Connery's wedding tackle in half in the movie Goldfinger. Like lasers, the latest AI tools, such as generative AI, are solutions looking for a problem. It may be 20 years or more before we fully bed tools like OpenAI into daily life and business workflows most effectively, and above all, energetically and environmentally efficiently. If we are to realize AI's potential, we need realistic energy transition plans. We also need to learn how to recycle and reuse the material that chips are made of and the chips themselves, and where in our economies we can reduce competing, wasteful energy and resource uses. Just like those who developed lasers in the 1960s, we can speculate on how folk in 60 years' time might look at our first fumblings of the digital economy, stumblings with generative AI, and our current mismanagement of energy supplies and natural resource extraction. Harkening back to the movie Goldfinger, we're pointing the laser at our own nether regions rather than 007s. Until next time, thank you for listening.